Are you getting critical reviews for your jazz from your albums?
Good Swings has been reviewed on a few different outlets now, and most of them are internet outlets. The big jazz magazines kind of avoid me because I'm an indie artist, and quite frankly, I think they're somewhat transphobic. But the some of the internet write-ups, there's a wonderful internet magazine called the International Review of Music, and they wrote one of the best reviews I've ever received. A guy named Devin Wendell, he's a really nice man, a good writer, just gave us an outstanding write-up for Mood Swings. Maybe the best I've ever received. And all the reviews and stuff are on the CD Baby page for Mood Swings. If you just go to cdbaby.com and then you can do a search on my name, Jennifer Lightham, L-E-I-T-H-A-M. And then if you go to the page for Mood Swings, go down to read more on about this album. And then all this stuff is there, the liner notes, my release announcements, and all of the reviews that I've been able to find so far. There's a really good one from Japan, too, that's in there. And really, reviews have been as good as I've ever received. Future Christmas was like that, too. You know, it's been hard to get the traditional jazz media to cover me at all since my transition. They kind of covered me right at the crux of the transition. I had a big feature in Cadence magazine. I was the cover story there. And Jazz Times was the best of all of those. They did in 2009, Don Heckman wrote a feature about me that was fantastic. I mean, he should have gotten awards for that write-up. It was ahead of its time. But other than that, the Downbeat magazine actually was a little sarcastic and made an announcement about my having surgery. You know, it was weird. It's just wrong. It's kind of funny.
The album prior to that, talk about The Real Me and The Real Me Live. And
that's from 2006. This is like four since then, but that was my biggest seller by far. That actually was when people were still buying CDs. They don't do that so much anymore. Now they're streaming or downloading. But I sold enough CDs of that record to buy myself a car, which is unheard of on a jazz record. That CD sold... And it competed. I think I sold more records that year than Wynton Marsalis.
Wow.
It's that much. It did great. And I wish all the rest of them had done so well since then. But the buying process has changed for people. They don't buy physical CDs so much anymore. You got to just hope that you get enough streams out there that the bookers and financiers are willing to put you on a stage and that enough people will pay a cover charge to hear you. And that's kind of what it's become. But The Real Me was my sort of, it was 5 years after I had transitioned. I had left Doc Severinsen right about the time I put out The Real Me. And it was basically my announcement to the world, hey, here I am. And I tried to educate the jazz audience, you know, the cynical, older folks, that hey, it's still me. It's now that's the real me.
I took a ride out on freeway. I took the long way trying to get home. But you know, it's a drive I shouldn't have to make. The road's too long, the path of the song is too much to take. Why did the one side want to dominate? Just to make it all one, the deal's no fun, to make it all right. But I was the only one to see my breath the start. Kept it inside, went for the ride, didn't know why, in my heart. You came to me, decided just to put up where the temples are in. It wasn't cool about the woman go to school and learned that life is in your name. Now that the Nexus is behind me, I take no joy. You know, the mind is the key, the happiness free, there's no one to blame.
Mm-hmm.
Original material, and it made quite a splash. I'm so proud of that record. Plus, I posed naked for the cover. That helped. Well, I was behind my bass, mind you, but that's as close to salacious as I ever came.
Let's talk about some of those tracks. Split Brain.
That's a tune that I wrote in the '80s, early '80s, and I recorded it with Ed Shaughnessy's band. It's called Split Brain because I was married at the time and my ex had a degree in experimental psychology and felt I was always right up front about who I was. We got married, we met in 1980 and she named me Jennifer on her first date. It kind of tells you something. And so we got married and she felt that my issues about gender identity had to do with having a split brain. And you know, split brain meaning one side of your brain dominates and doesn't communicate well with your left, like your artistic side doesn't get along with your practical side, you know, sort of like that. But I'm actually ambidextrous. I play left-handed, but I use both hands equally. And that proves that I don't have a split brain because if the right side of the brain controls the left side of your body, then only left-handed people are in their right minds. Sorry, that was some shtick I threw in. I do have to do that every once in a while. It's how I'm drawn. But so anyway, split brain now doesn't really mean split brain anymore. I put lyrics to it when I put out The Real Me. And The Real Me is, like I say, it's all original music, and it's sort of an autobiographical track that it takes. And split brain represents that earlier time in my life. And if there's a biological song that I wrote, biologic, that's wrong. If there's like a song that tracks my history or whatever, speaks to being transgender, it would be Split Brain. And, you know, the lyric speaks to that. I mean, I was the only one that knew it all from the start, kept it inside, went for the ride, didn't know why in my heart. You know, it goes on and on like that. And that's probably the only time I've ever really put it all into one song. So it's probably my favorite YouTube of that's out there of me playing is the video on Split Brain.
And there's a quote from that track piece there. It says, "They're gone, but now it's a whole new world of wonder. You know, the mind is a key, the happiness free. There's no one to blame."
Yeah, that I was writing that to my parents, basically.
And how do your parents support you with your transition?
Well, they didn't. But we didn't speak for almost 7 years. My brother helped put us back together again, and so did my sister, who's unfortunately gone now. But, you know, they kept speaking up for me. My brother and sister were great. And my brother hosted a Thanksgiving. And so we started to thaw a little bit, and I went back again for another one, and I brought an early version of I Stand Corrected back there to show my parents. And my brother made them sit and watch it. Because they didn't want to talk about it, you know. And so I Stand Corrected, basically the best thing that movie ever did for me was it kind of made my parents come on board, you know. And then now we're getting along a lot better, you know. They're much older, and I'm no spring chicken, and I'm fortunate that my parents are both still here. I don't know how much longer we have together, but it's so gratifying that we're speaking again.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Stick It In Your Ear.
Wrote that song back in the early 90s when I was working with Mel Torme, and I wrote it with his voice in mind. I wanted him to sing it. And I recorded it on a much earlier record called The Southpaw. And I had some great players on that record, and Buddy Childers and Bob Cooper both played on it. And we did it instrumentally. And I played it for Mel, and Mel said that he... if I were to record that on a subsequent record, he would do it for free. I showed him the lyric and all, and he really liked it. And unfortunately, he passed away and he wasn't able to do it, so it falls to me. And when we recorded it on The Real Me, and I sang for the first time on a record, Split Brain, then Stick in Your Ear, and I wrote some newer lyrics. I sort of updated the lyrics to kind of reflect Stick It in Your Ear, meaning sort of a reaction to ugliness of what the music business has become and all of the mechanization that goes on in pop music now. It's hardly human beings anymore. So it's sort of a backlash to that. Stick in your ear. Really, really tender, romantic, extremely heartfelt ballad called Stick It in Your Ear.
Remember when my sounds you heard were crystal clear? The melody and harmony was soothing to hear. But nowadays music seems designed to give you only fear. Yeah. Stick it in your ear. The times have changed and romance is a thing of the past. Cro-Magnon ways and doggy dog pervade to the last. I wish there was a way to keep from crying in your beer. Yeah. Stick it in your ear. Time was when all you heard was melody and harmony in sync with a dance. Nowadays, the medium has an odd chance.
Final one on the Real Me, The Trash Man Cometh.
Wrote that for the guy that put up the money to make my Lefty Leaps In record and my live record back in the 90s. His family owned a rubbish hauling business, and I called him The Trash Man. So that tune was to sort of celebrate the fact that he put up all the money to make that live record. It was a sweet thing. He hasn't spoken to me ever since my transition, unfortunately. But anyway, it's like a swaggering kind of very masculine song, and it sort of encompasses his personality. And we recorded that as a trio on The Real Me. I wanted to throw it in there. There was a particular DJ, Jeff Parlacha, used to play it all the time. I think I just messed up his name. Anyway. So I kind of wanted to put it on The Real Me too, hoping it would continue to get airplay. When I call you up, your line's engaged. I have had enough, so at your age, we have lost the time. So hard to find, and I will lose my mind if you won't see me. You won't see me. I don't know why you should want to hide, and I can't get through. My hands are tied.
If you won't see me, you won't see me.
moving on to Back to Mood Swings, you know, I'm really enjoying it. You Won't See Me. You decided to put in that kind of mainstream pop song and your interpretation of that.
Well, there's a record that Count Basie did of interpretations of Beatles tunes, and that sort of was the gestation for that idea. I like the sentiment of that song. I like the fact that it's really a dark song, but the way the Beatles recorded it, it's almost happy. And it's really not, you know, like two lovers breaking up and not in a good way, you know? And so I decided to take it even further, and I turned it into like a Mel Lewis shuffle. And it's got a fun lyric to sing. I love sustaining those notes and trying to like make it swing like Frank Sinatra were singing it or something, even though my voice, you know, is more like Tiny Tim's, you know? But just trying to make that ultra swing thing happen to some very simple harmony. And I've always loved the Beatles, and it's one of the reasons I play left-handed is because when I was a little kid, I dug Paul McCartney so much and the Beatles back in 1964 when they were on the Ed Sullivan Show. So I always you know, trying to emulate Paul, so whenever I pick up a guitar, I would do it left-handed, as I thought basses were played left-handed, and I wanted to be a bass player. At that time, I had no idea. I had no musical training. Years later, I studied quite a lot, and I still do. So by the time I got to a teacher, it was too late to turn around and play right-handed. So anyway, it's an homage. I kind of like to pay homage to the Beatles, and it's again on keeping on the mood swings continuum. It's definitely an uptick.
Yeah, it's a very positive album. Smart and sassy, extraordinary bass lines, and with your group. Now, this is a trio recording this on Mood Swings?
Mostly. The core group is Andy Langham and Randy Drake and I, who will be playing at Squash Grapes on November 19th. And then also, I have some guests on there. Jeff Linsky plays on a tune I wrote called Don't You Ever. It's sort of a protest to people that are constantly posting philosophers on Facebook rather than have any original thought of their own. They're telling you what Deepak Chopra thinks you should do today or Wayne Dyer or stuff like that. And somehow you're going to think that this person is more enlightened because they're sharing that stuff. When I much prefer reading people's original content, you know, what they really think. Anyway, this was sort of a backlash to that. And it's a very simple tune. It opens with the ukulele.
You ever quote a God today? You have never heard that word in any way. Don't you ever tell me how to play. You can keep it to yourself and walk away. Cause you can bet the farm that you can do no harm if you just will zip it. A tonic tried and true that when the thoughts are you, you'll be better off. But when it comes from people quoting Canlip manuals from their cyber handles, you can bet the farm that you can do no harm to just blow them off. Don't you ever teach a kid to pray on another kid who's trying to work it out. Don't you ever let them keep away anyone who's different or is filled with doubt. Cause you can bet the farm that you can do no harm if you just will zip it. A tonic tried and true that when the thoughts are you, you'll be better off. But when it comes from their cyber handles, you can bet the farm that you can do no harm to just blow them off. Thank you.
play a lot of softball, you know, and I play on one team in particular, and a bunch that I get together for a pickup game are just happen to be a bunch of lesbians, which is cool. And I love those folks. They're so cool. And they seem to flock to hear this artist that plays ukulele all the time. So I thought, maybe if I put a ukulele on my record, they'll come to hear me play. So that was kind of my snide way of throwing that in there. And Jeff Linsky is like a man, just unbelievable guitar player. He's so unique, combines so many genres. He's a great classical technique and plays a nylon string and finger picking and just incredible. So he's also a world-renowned ukulele player. So it's not like I have somebody just playing real simply. So then the other guest is Jamie Finlay. And when my sister had passed, I felt like the CD needed another song. It needed another really upbeat song and something that was crazily upbeat. I mean, something I wanted to swing in a completely different direction. And frankly, I wanted something to shake me out of my own doldrums, you know. So Jamie and I had played back in the 80s, and he's a good writer. He's written a lot of good original music. And Jamie, again, is another really unique musician. He plays guitar in his own style. You know immediately it's him. And he can pop out harmonics like nobody's business. Like bells are ringing on his guitar all the time. He's amazing. And he wrote this one tune that I've remembered since the 80s, Glad Tidings. And I was in such a dark place that I didn't really feel like writing anything joyous, especially. So I asked Jamie if he would allow me to record his tune. And he said he'd play on it too. So that made it even better because his technique is so original. As if you've heard Glad Tidings, you'll know that. So that became the upswing song after the darkest piece on my record, which is My Heart Had Wings, and a breakup tune that I wrote that's really emotionally bare. I laid myself bare for that tune. So that Glad, My Heart Had Wings and Glad Tidings, like the whole record is built so that hopefully you listen to it from beginning to end. In order, the order I put it in, like old school vinyl LPs, you know, because it almost is like a statement, the entire record together. And those two tunes, putting them together is that's my favorite thing on the record, is when My Heart Had Wings goes into Glad Tidings.
Our lives tend our wounds, did we gain our lives?
not to be abused. Love hurts sometimes. Words can kill. Just friends.
Yeah, classic album concept.
Well, yeah. I sort of came up musically in the 70s and 80s, you know.
Who were some of your other influences? You did say the Beatles, and of course you played with Ed Shaughnessy and Mel Torme. Other things that inspired you to pick up the bass and work diligently?
When I was a kid, I loved to play along with my records with this toy guitar that I had, and the Beatles were like the number one thing. Mm-hmm. But I also loved the Motown stuff of the time, the James Jamerson bass lines and stuff, and I would sit and try to figure them out on my guitar, and so they were influential. But the biggest influence, obviously, was my bass teacher, my when I finally settled on my teacher, basically he changed my life. He made me become a musician. He taught me how to practice and put me on such a great path and helped me get my career started in southeastern Pennsylvania where I grew up. I basically owe everything to him. And I used to go out to hear him play a lot. And he was playing with this incredible pianist from France, Bernard Payfair. And my teacher's name was Al Stauffer. Hearing those two guys play just was so inspiring to me. I wanted to be like them so bad. Bernard was so creative. He was like, some people call him the French Art Tatum. I mean, Art Tatum was maybe the physically most imposing piano player there's ever been. Bernard also brought classical world into jazz and in such a brilliant way. And there was such an inspirational thing at the beginning there. And then as my career went on, there have been plenty of mentors. And as far as bass players go, George DeVivier was one of the first people that kind of took me under his wing. I met him playing at Palumbo's nightclub in South Philadelphia. He came down from New York. So I got to meet him, and he was giving me advice. And when I was on Woody Herman's band traveling, I met Slam Stewart and played together with him. And he was a big influence on me. Even though we didn't spend a lot of time together, we were in residence at State University of New York for about a week. And then we corresponded a lot, and I saw him many more times after that. And then Milt Hinton was a really big influence on me. I started to do jazz parties and jazz cruises back in the 80s, first with Ed Shaughnessy's band and Bob Cooper, the great tenor player. And Milt Hinton and my paths would cross a lot at these things. What a sweet man. Oh, my goodness. He gave me all the confidence in the world. I really miss that guy. And Milt encompassed the whole history of the music. He was in Cab Calloway's band, and he was like the first African-American to sort of cross the color lines in studio work in New York. Just an inspirational man. I loved him so much. You know, and along the way, there have been so many other influences. Of course, Mel Torme was a great influence on me, and just his curiosity about music. He was constantly trying to better himself, as all the musicians I've admired and respected have all done that. Oh, goodness, there's so many of them. Bob Cooper, of course, the great tenor saxophone player from the Stan Kenton group and all the West Coast stuff that he did, was a big influence. And Snooky Young, a trumpet player that was, God, he goes back to the Lunsford band. He was another one that encompasses all of the history of the music, was just a dear, dear man. And when I was going through my transition, Snooky was just instrumental in keeping my spirits up, you know, when things were really tough. I'll never forget that guy. I owe him the world. You know, Sarah's just a sprinkling of a few of them. There's so many.
Alison Krauss, Nickel Creek, Edgar Meyer, Bella Fleck,
Well, those are contemporary artists that I really like a lot. I like all sorts of genres. I'm not locked into one genre.
And you've been interested in playing in those other genres as well.
Yeah, I don't get asked to do it very often, but if people were to call, I'd be out there in a heartbeat. I mean, I still play electric bass. I teach a lot of electric bass students, and it's been a long time since I've done important work on the electric. I would do it. The opportunities for musicians are definitely dwindling. Well, it's changed. The whole way of getting paid to make music has changed a lot. But with crowdfunding, I mean, you get to really find out who your friends are. But not only just that, you find out who your fans are. In that I was able to raise in a month over $20,000. We raised $19,000 some on Indiegogo, and then other people gave me money over that. So that is what really keeps my spirits up and keeps me moving forward, is knowing there are people out there that are willing to buck me up and support me. I have patrons that I'm just so thankful for, so grateful for. They make my life so much better. That really inspires me, the fact that people are interested in me enough to want to keep me going and keep me going on a path that I choose, you know, that I'm not having to compromise my music. I'm making the music I want to make. And Mood Swing certainly speaks to that, and so is Future Christmas, that these were funded by my fans, and people are buying them. Very uplifting to me, and keeps me optimistic, and thinking the future is going to be looking up.
Your optimism shows in your music. I think it's quite unique, the voice that you give your bass, and of course, your voice yourself, your lyrics.
Well, yeah, I'm just singing now since The Real Me. I mean, I didn't sing for close to 30 years. I was always embarrassed people would clock me. They would think, that person sounds like a girl. You know, and now that's an asset. Again, it was like sitting on a stool all those years. I didn't want to give myself away. I was so afraid getting clocked. Now I can let myself go completely and be who I truly am. And it informs my art.
What's up for you? You hope to be touring more, making more albums?
Yeah, I'd like to get to the point where I can tour with my trio. I mean, I could put together, you know, very small scale kind of tours right now. I can go back east and pick up local musicians and play in clubs back there. But my hope is that somehow we get enough visibility that I can go out and book my trio and get enough money that I can bring them along and get them a hotel room and transportation, you know, those kind of things. That's my dream. My dream would be to get, you know, like I used to do with Mel Torme, like do some of these tours while we're out living in a bus for 6 weeks. You don't mind you staying in hotels, but like we're busing from town to town and people are coming to hear us play. That would be my dream. But practically what I'm doing is booking dates in the periphery, mostly of Los Angeles. Beside the Squash Grape thing, we have a thing coming up in Riverside, California on November 29th where I'm playing at a Center for Spiritual Living and doing a sermon and trying to, and I'm not religious, so it's real interesting. This is not the first time I've done this either. That's going to be fun. I've got, you know, some private party work coming up that I enjoy doing that too. It's really fun to play in someone's home for, you know, people that are supportive and dig you. You know, that's a real great social experience. I've got some, like the Catalina's gig is coming up on December 22nd. That's the Future Christmas annual holiday show. Boy, that's something we should be touring with. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. I just keep putting my art out there and see who's interested, you know. There's a lot of people around the world that know who I am. And I've had some great experiences playing in other countries. I'm hoping someday to be able to take my trio along on those things and not just play by, you know, with the local players. It'd be great to have a touring entity as a band.
How can people contact you? I know you're on CD Baby, Facebook, etc.
Yeah, well, just type in my name somewhere, and then usually that works. My name is spelled a little funny, so it's hard to find me unless you know how it's spelled. It's L. My first name is Jennifer with two N's. My last name is Leitham. M as in mother. So jenniferlightham.com is my website. And then Jennifer Lightham is also my Facebook fan page. I have a profile, too, that has my middle name in it, but I prefer people go to my fan page. I'm on Twitter and Instagram and all these different places.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. Is there anything else you'd like parting shots for our listeners? We're looking forward to listening to you in Ventura at the Squash Grapes.
Well, if you come to Squash Grapes, please be sure to say hello to me. It sounds like we're going to be right up next to the audience. And I'm not a wallflower. I will not shrink if you come up and say hi. I love meeting people, and I think it'll be a great venue for us. It sounds just like a wonderful place. And thank you, Bizu, for having me on the show. I really do appreciate it. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.